Hello, we are Emma White
and David J. Lilly.
We're both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We're both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you right here.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or a creative type, or you spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkly chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Emma
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life. Hi, so this is David today. It's not David and Emma because Emma's not around, but I'm not by myself. I am with an amazing man who I am very glad I call friend, and he is someone who some of you may have been seeing on national TV or listening to on national radio for the last 7 or 8 weeks, and his name is Piers Carpenter. Good morning, Piers.
Hello, David.
How are you this morning?
Yes, very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm great, thanks. It's a bleary Monday morning, and I'm feeling full of energy for some reason, which is unlike me at all. Anyway, let's get on with the podcast, because people don't want to just listen to me. They want to hear you. So we know one another through both taking part in this wonderful little thing called All That Glitters. And even though, obviously, we know we were recording it back last year, we've only seen it now. So I would like to know, and I'm sure the listeners would like to know, how does it feel to watch yourself win this show on TV?
I don't know, it's a really weird one. I did struggle with the first few episodes seeing and hearing myself. Obviously I know what I look like, but my mannerisms and things, you don't see it, so it's a bit awkward when you do see yourself for the first time. You're like, am I really like that?
I agree, yes.
But then I got, you know, you get used to it as it goes on. And then the winning of it, I don't know, it still hasn't really sort of sunk in, which is even weirder because we did it so long ago. It was filmed so long ago.
Mm.
But I think that sort of made it feel more surreal, because it's something that you can't talk about. You can't, you know, even mention. No one else knows. It ends up feeling a bit like a dream.
Yes.
So then watching it on the TV, it still felt like a dream to me. It felt like watching a program that I wasn't necessarily in. It just felt like watching a program. Yeah, it's a funny one. I'm sure, you know, over the next few weeks it will start to sink in. I already am so overwhelmed with the amount of people that have got in touch with me.
Fantastic.
Commented on posts, sent me messages, emails. It really is quite incredible. I don't think I sort of realised what sort of level the programme was at, if you know what I mean. Like, I didn't realise I'd get the response that I have had, which has just been incredible.
That's really good. I know when we all got together fairly recently with lovely Sean Lean, he was telling us that, you know, the kind of figures that the BBC had told him about viewers, and we'd smashed it. And, you know, we'd done not even better than they hoped for, but we'd done better than series one as well. So, yeah, we just kind of roll with the punches at the moment, don't we?
Well, it's exactly that. People keep asking me, you know, what are you going to do? What's your sort of, like, not business plan, but, you know, how are you going to sort of capitalize on this?
Mm.
And the honest answer that I have is I don't know. Well, I mean, you probably could expect a certain level of business or interaction. I didn't want to do that. I know that sounds very naive, but like I said, it all still feels like a dream. So obviously I did do preparation work. I made my collection and stuff, but in terms of sort of people contacting me for bespoke things and, you know, having time to do everything, I'm just sort of taking it each step at a time, really.
Great. That's all you can really do, isn't it? That actually leads very nicely onto my next question, which is, obviously, people know that you work for a jeweller's, but you have your own jewellery space as well. Some of them may have seen it. There's a little snippet of you working in your studio, but many people may not have. So give us a quick rundown. What's your studio space like? You know, how do you like to work when you're working by yourself?
It's small. Right. But, well, it's not, I mean, it's not that small, but it's small in comparison to sort of what I'm used to. I often find that I'm a terrible one for when I'm at work, all the jobs are laid out in order of what I have to do, everything like that. Like, I sort it all out so that I can just start plowing through them all. Whereas in my workshop, when I'm doing my own work, I feel like I'm a lot more, I'm not going to say disorganized, but it's a lot more thinking about things, and like tools aren't exactly where I want them, which I know sounds crazy because that's my workshop, but I think I'm used to the workshop that I'm in 5 days a week. So it sometimes can add on quite a lot of time sort of preparing things and getting it all ready.
But it's your space, and do you feel that you're more creative in your space, or do you feel kind of frustratedly creative when you're at work, and that you've got suddenly ideas pop in when you work and you don't have the time and the opportunity to deal with it there and then?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I do feel more creative at the workshop that I work in, you know, 9 to 5. It is quite hard. I mean, I recently went to Steve or Mustafa's workshop.
Yep.
And I sat at his bench because he was showing me something there. And I just felt overwhelmingly creative. He had it's one of those things where I think I'll have to sort of revamp my space. I made it sort of practical, not necessarily a creative space. But yeah, Steve's workshop, I mean, he had sort of burnt wood on the walls. He had loads of old tools, not even necessarily for using, just for looking at it. And he had a part of an old anchor chain, you know, like for a ship's anchor. It was just really, really, I don't know. I can't explain it. The vibe was very, very good.
Yeah.
And after seeing his, I did think, do you know what? I need to make my space more
you,
more me. I mean, I do feel quite creative in my house. Usually when I come up with sort of designs for people and things, it is just sat on my dining room table. I'm not sat on it. I'm sat at a chair working on it.
I think we realized that one.
But my house is very me. So it's, you know, I've got gilt wood antiques and stuff. Just like, it's very, very me.
So you've got to get that out into the studio as well now, is what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Well, it all happens with time. Things don't magically disappear, do they? And sometimes we don't have the time, because we're working, making stuff, we don't have the time to make the space what we want it to be. I know I've revamped my studio, which you've been to, probably 3 or 4 times now, and it's still a work in progress. I go in some days and think, I don't like that there, but I don't have the time to deal with it. I just kind of, you know, work around it. Anyway, moving on, talking about creative. So who inspires you? Because obviously we saw all this different work that you created, and you've got this amazing new collection on your website. So who or what inspires you to start making or start designing?
This is a very good question. I think the way that I've learned to make jewellery is very different from, you know, how maybe you might have learned and other creative people. I was always creative at school, and then when I sort of then I worked in an antique shop, and just seeing really nice old pieces, it doesn't even have to be, you know, I know they sort of focus in on the Art Deco sort of thing that I like, which I do like, but you know, it could be Art Nouveau, Victorian, anything. Some, you know, I'll just see a piece of jewelry and just think that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But what if it was a little bit like this instead? I like the shapes and the lines. I follow many, many jewelers, again, because I just love looking at jewelry. It's, I don't have like an artist that I sort of look at and think, oh, that really inspires me. It's more looking at the work that other people can achieve and think, How can I get on that level? It's really hard. A lady actually reached out from New Zealand after the final aired, and you know, gave me some really kind words. But she also said that she was learning to make jewelry, and that it would never be as good as mine. And I just said to her that that's not how you've got to look at it. For me, I've always seen things that like a master goldsmith would make. And obviously I know, you know, I compare something that I've done to it, it's not going to be as good. But that I use that everything that I make, I want it to be better than the last thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think really motivates me to have my sights on quality of work and designs and things like that set really high. And although you might not achieve it, I don't take it as a knockback. It's, well, what can next time be?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does indeed. I mean, I think we all have different ways that we work through our creativity. And there are many times that I find I'm just completely stuck. I know I want to do something, but I don't know what it is. And I have to kind of wait almost until I'm exposed to something. And then, like you say, you see something you really like and it really excites you, but you can see what you can do with it. And then you can go off down that rabbit hole type of thing.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I must admit, I am terrible for coming up with ideas at the strangest times and not writing them down.
Right.
And then I'll think months later, I'll be like, oh, there was something I thought of doing, but now I can't remember what it was. So I do need to just get a notepad and walk around with it, really.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I was given one that's about the size of a credit card many years ago, which I supposedly always have in my pocket, but I don't. You know, I think it still has more blank pages in than anything else. But yeah. So interestingly, talking further on what you're saying about this lady from New Zealand, you and I have come from very different backgrounds to making jewellery. If you were to give someone three pointers as to how to progress in their desire to become a jeweller, what would those three things be?
So my first one is, how bad do you want it?
Good point.
It's a really, really hard, the way that I've gone through it, it's a really hard industry. Obviously, you can go to college and things like that, or university.
Mm.
And I can't really speak for that because I haven't done that. The way I done it, I sort of wanted an apprenticeship. I wanted to do that. That's, you know, I set my sights. I want to be a goldsmith or a jeweler, or, you know, all the different terms you can call it. And I left school and got a job in an antique shop where there was a jeweler upstairs.
Yep.
And I worked there for 7 years, constantly asking him to teach me.
Mm-hmm.
In that time, I built my own workbench at home. I spent my money on tools, you know, basic tools to start off with, and then I start teaching myself. He kept saying, oh no, I'm not really looking to have anyone, which is fair enough. And started teaching myself, and then perseverance. 7 years later, I must have wore him down. He decided to teach me. I think an apprenticeship is really good. Obviously, you have downsides, as you know, if you flipped it around and you went to college or university, there's upsides and downsides.
Sure.
I think you get more creativity doing a university course or college course, whereas maybe my creativity was sort of stunted. However, I was on the bench doing work 5 days, you know, 9 till 5, 5 days a week. You can really, really pick up how to do things. I know it sounds, you know, like soldering and things. Everyone knows when you first start soldering, it's not as easy as everyone else makes it look.
True.
But if you're doing it constantly, you know, you get used to it, pulling solder in a certain direction with your flame, or it's just that constant repetition sort of becomes ingrained into what you do, and then you don't even think about what you're doing. It just goes right for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say for me, I'd say 1, 2, and 3, if you want to get into jewellery, is all, how much do you want it?
Okay, that's a good point.
For me anyway, you know, I was really passionate about it and it's what I wanted to do. I think it's a really hard industry to get into, and it just depends how badly you want it, what you're willing to sacrifice to get it.
Cool. Well, if you were, if say you had had a different trajectory in life and, you know, you weren't a jeweller, well, who would you switch lives with for a day? What would you go do? Who would you be?
Wow. A question I've never really thought about. I used to want to have two careers.
Right.
The first one, I must have watched Top Gun or Pearl Harbor or something. I wanted to be a fighter jet pilot.
Great.
Academically, realized that was unachievable. Well, I say unachievable. I've never been academic. I have been more hands-on and more creative.
Okay.
And the second one was, I wanted to be a vet. I absolutely love animals, all of them. apart from spiders. But still, I don't kill them. I just get them and put them away from my house.
Before the cats get them.
Well, yeah. But yeah, love all animals. Then I realised that to be a vet, obviously you do have to be academic for that also, but it was more that you have to see animals in a lot of distress and, you know, have to do things to them that aren't pleasant, but for the, mm-hmm. the greater good, that I couldn't do either.
Fair enough. You're too much of a big softie, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. So if I could be anyone else for a day, it'd either be someone that works with animals in a way that's not distressing for them, or be a fighter jet pilot.
Okay, yeah, I can see you as a fighter jet pilot. Yeah, next top gun, there you go.
Yeah.
So what, when you're working, do you have like podcasts or music playing and stuff like that? Or are you kind of in the zone and very quiet and...
I usually have music playing. I quite like...
So what kind of music do you like listening to?
I know everyone listens to all sorts of music, but I listen to pretty much everything apart from sort of like classical music. Sometimes I theme my days. So sometimes I'll have I'm a real big fan of like 60s, what would you call it? Like soulful music.
Okay.
Like Sam Cooke, Otis Redding. That sort of thing.
Nice.
Especially to work to. I think it's quite chill. It's just nice. I also like that they're always really, I don't know, it's just a soulfulness.
Yeah.
But then other days I might have like sort of 80s rock, you know, then I've got all things that I grew up with. So like things from 2010, sort of club music, all sorts really. My playlists are definitely very diverse.
Okay. That's a bit like mine. Mind you, I tend to head over to Bossa Nova again from the 60s. If I'm in the zone, I just find that rhythm just works really well, and things tend to go well, including the soldering at that kind of rhythm. So yeah, that's where I head for. Yeah. So we know you're very good at what you do because we've seen the beauty and the quality of the work that you've created. And if people go to your website, they'll see your amazing work there as well. But what you're not good at?
Oh, here it comes.
Go on. What you're not good at? It doesn't have to be jewelry related.
Hiding facial expressions.
Well, yes, that one came. Yes, is true. It was written large on your face throughout the show, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm also.
Whatever you were thinking, we knew.
Yeah, I'm also terrible at explaining feelings and just explaining things in general. I feel like I sort of beat around the bush a little bit.
Okay.
And also, I tell you, the one that's jewelry related is sore piercing.
Oh yeah.
So I find that, I mean, I'm not terrible. I'm not going to say I'm terrible, but it is the one thing that I really struggle to do to a level that I'm happy with, if that makes sense. I usually always cut away from the line and then file it all up. Mm-hmm. But that, obviously, if you could cut a really nice clean line, you're saving yourself a lot of time in tidying it up because there's minuscule. I don't know why. I'm not bad at it. I just, when it comes to sort of intricate things, I think what it is maybe I rush too much.
Okay.
It's also that I know you're supposed to hold the saw frame like as if it was a hamster or a guinea pig or something like that. There's a terminology someone said before. For me, I always find that I know that it's not a strength of mine, I will maybe tense up a bit, and I realize that I'm holding the saw frame really rigid,
right,
and then have to relax, but then it'll happen all over again. So it's just one of those things that maybe I've not done enough of it. Like I said, if you're doing things constantly,
yeah,
all day every day, you can pick up on it. Maybe I should do a bit more.
Fair enough. So on the opposite side of that coin, what makes brings you the most joy when you're working, either obviously in the in your own studio or you're working in the shop?
Oh, a very good question. I must admit, I'm a huge fan of the feeling that you get when you've made something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know a lot of jewelers give pieces to stone setters, and you know, I would, if it was something that was, you know, out of my league, I definitely would. But I'm always, I think, I don't know what it is. I feel like I've got a real sense of confidence when I'm at the bench. And if I see someone do something at a bench, I think, oh, well, I'll give that a try.
Yep.
So I'm lucky in the fact that I have done that, and I can set stones to a level that I'm happy with in most cases. So for me, it's making something, and when that piece is finished, and 100% of that piece has come from you.
Yeah,
I feel like a real satisfaction that I look at something that I think that's really nice, and okay. I've managed to make that.
No, I totally get that. So that deftly leads me not onto my next question at all, but I'm still going to ask it, and that is, if you're a bit of fruit, what kind of bit of fruit would you be?
Ooh.
And why?
I don't know. The good answer would be something exotic, wouldn't it?
Of course. We're all exotic.
Do you know, the only one that's coming to mind is a banana. I have no idea why. I'm just thinking, I think bananas are mainly the only fruit that I sort of eat. Idea why. Maybe my yellow complexion.
Oh, maybe you haven't had breakfast yet, and that's what it is. Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So we're going to think of you as a banana from now on, clearly. Fine. Yeah. Yeah. Moving swiftly on.
I was thinking, was them, you know, there was them two bananas that, I mean, you might not, you probably won't know it. When I was a kid, there's a program and there was two bananas dressed up in pyjamas. Oh, Bananas in Pyjamas, that's what it was called.
Okay, no, I don't know that one.
Kids program. No, right. No. Okay, moving on swiftly.
So, what do you think your unique skill is that has helped you to become the jeweler you are today? What is it that's you?
Wow, David, you're coming out with all the good questions today.
Good.
I think for me, it's the finish of things. Well, actually, no, I take it all back. For me, it's definitely the guy that I done my apprenticeship with. Right. I can't comment for all of them, but again, this is obviously why I'm pro apprenticeships. He was fantastic. You can imagine, I mean, you will know, going into a workshop, you can't keep everything hidden away, especially if you're doing repairs, because I might need a bit of 9-carat yellow gold, I might need some 18-carat white gold, I might need this, I might need that. It's not as simple as just taking on someone that will help you. You have to give trust 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And he is very old school, but he's also so, you know, so trusting, and so he sort of let me loose, if that makes sense. Yep. He never told me, you know, I wouldn't be at the level of setting an opal. He'd give me an opal and say, I can just set that in there, you know, and I might break it. And he would never say, oh, what have you done? And he'd never before I'd done the job say, be really, you know, don't do this, don't do that, you're going to break it. And he really sort of let me feel my way around things. I think that has helped me as well in looking at things online and thinking, well, why can't I do that? Yep. No one's ever told me that I can't. Plus, he does have really high standards, like, you know, rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
So he would tell me, you know, if something's not up to scratch, but then he'd also show me how to get it better. I don't know, I can't sort of big him up enough, really. He's been absolutely fantastic.
That's amazing. And who is this man then? Is there a little story who he is and how you, you know, where he is?
His name's Robert Hadley. Mm-hmm. Well, his actual name's Robert Willie, but his trading name's Robert Hadley. And he is in the workshop where I work, which is in Rochester High Street,
yep.
In Kent. He's had loads of apprentices throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I think when you work with someone all day, every day, I don't know, I can't explain it. The relationship we have is sort of, it's unbelievable. He's almost sort of like a father figure.
Yeah.
You know, he's always looked after me. He's always got my back. And he's just, I can see now why when I kept asking him to take me on, he kept saying no. I can sort of see it now. He didn't just take on someone to teach and mm-hmm. you know to pay it was like he's taken on emotionally me, you know, trusting me. He's just a really good guy, and he has really looked after me throughout the years, which is why I'm planning on staying and looking after him for a while.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the time with apprenticeships, specifically, because I know college, you finish and then you can go out on your own. That's how that works. With an apprenticeship, I know I can go out on my own, but he paid me when I earned him nothing.
Right.
He's taught me not all of his skills, but a hell of a lot of them. And I just feel like it's a nice thing to stay and, you know, earn him some money. He can sort of chill out a bit, not have to stress about all of the work.
That's a great ethic.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully one day I'll find an apprentice that has the same view, because I know a lot of them don't. He's had a lot of people, as soon as they know what they need to know, is see you later, bye-bye.
Right.
So I'm hoping that one day I'll have a few that are the same. But we'll see. Like I said, every day at a time at the minute. It's
So actually, that does lead me nicely on to the next question. Was if you had the time and freedom to make absolutely anything jewellery-wise, what would it be?
So if I had the time, the time for me is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I had the time and the materials, without doubt, I would make a tiara.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm not talking like, you know, this little sort of one that you anyone could wear. I'm talking royal diamonds, you know, big and intricate. You know, this. Yep. I mean, you'll know, because again, obviously, the interest in jewelry. If you go to a museum or something and you see a tiara, mm-hmm. and you look at it and you think, wow.
Yeah, the intricacy is just mind-boggling. Yeah,
just wow. Yeah, I'd love to do something like that. And hopefully I will one day.
Well, you've put it out there now. So who knows? Somebody may be listening, think, I've got an awful lot of money burning a hole in my pocket and I want a tiara. Now they know who to come to.
Yeah. Wills and Kate. Yeah.
Okay. So we've been chatting for quite a while now. And I think, you know, you've offered us some really lovely insights into who you are and what makes you tick, and even that you're a banana at heart and, you know, things like that. So before we go, obviously listeners will want to know how to get in touch with you. They've seen you on TV, and obviously when we don't have surnames on TV, we're just Piers and David and Tian and Emma and so forth, which I know some people say, well, you know, we're not even in the credits. We're not even credited on the show as actually appearing, you know, we're some mystery person. So how can listeners get in touch with you?
Obviously you can find me on Instagram, which mm-hmm. my handle is @ Piers Carpenter Jewelry. That's my name, Piers mm-hmm. Carpenter. And then Jewelry, the English version. And then I have been, if people are contacting me about work rather than, you know, just saying hi, I have been asking them to email me.
Okay.
Just because it's much easier for me to keep on top of. Yep. And that's PiersCarpenterJewelry@gmail.com.
Okay. So
again, very simple. And that's about it, really. I take it from there. An email is always a really good start. And then go on from there and see where some designs can get to.
Okay. And you've obviously got your website at PiersCarpenterJewelry.com, is it?
Yeah, www.PiersCarpenterJewelry.com.
Okay. Yeah. And what kind of work can they find on there at the moment? What's your new collection on there like?
So I created a collection based off the first ring I ever made for myself, which was a snake ring.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called the Venom Collection, and it's, I don't really know how to describe it. It's sort of Art Deco-y meets snakes.
Okay, that's pretty.
I've tried, I know snakes have been done a lot, but I've tried to do something a little bit different with the idea, with the concept.
They do look different, having seen them myself. They do, with some amazing gems that you've set in some of them as well.
Oh, thank you.
No problem.
I did have one big up, because I couldn't mm-hmm. do it at the time. So for all the listeners, David, for a wedding present to me and Paige, gave us a stained glass course, and it was fantastic, unbelievably fantastic. If you're into creative things, 100% do it. But honestly, I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. I mean, it was fantastic having you two there for that day, just the three of us in the end doing it. And it was brilliant. It was a brilliant day. And I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And you both made amazing pieces.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we were really happy with them. It was just really good. And it was really nice to spend the day with you, of course, David.
Thank you. And likewise, it was good. Okay. Right. We are done. I will look forward to seeing you when I see you, hopefully soon. And yeah, thank you so much for being here and giving us some little bits of insight into what makes Piers Carpenter tick.
Thank you very much for having me.
No problem at all.
I'll see you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us in another couple of weeks for the next one. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track, Octopi, which is our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.